Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We hit the field light. All day light. All night light. Here we go. Keep it on. We don't hit them light.
This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast with James Rapine and Daryl Ryder on 92.3thefan.com.
What up and welcome into another edition of the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. I'm James Rapine. He is Daryl Ryder. We are your beat writers for 92.3 The Fan, 92.3thefan.com. With you each and every week to talk about Cleveland sports. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcast, including the radio.com app. Daryl, we have a lot to get to. We're going to get to some Cavs in a bit. We're going to get to the most important things in a wedding because I'm getting married in 5 days. So we'll get to that coming up as well. And but first, we got to start talk about the Indians. And before we do that, got to mention, quick note, just to all of our listeners out there, we are not going to be able to do a podcast next week due to the wedding. Daryl's on vacation. He's gracious enough to join us today, despite being on vacation today as well. So, Daryl, thank you for doing that. We will be back right after the All-Star game, July 10th, with plenty of All-Star takeaways and so much more. So don't go anywhere. This is a scheduled little break for us. And then it's All-Star game, then it's Browns, and then we are going to hit the ground running with all things Browns, Indians, and then Cavaliers when basketball season comes around. So there's a lot to get to, Daryl. I appreciate the time as always. And you're doing this, and I'm going to be honest with you. It's okay. We can be upfront with our listeners. You're doing this from the home office today, so I don't get to see your face. But it's good to have you. How are you?
It's your wedding week, so I thought I'd spare you the horror of seeing me this week.
See, I was going to make a joke like that about my face, too, but you beat me to it. So there you go. All right? There.
You're the one getting married, not me.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah.
Somebody likes your face.
Half the time she likes my face. I think the other half the time it's like, I don't think so. All right. So let's dive into this because the Indians, who you buried, I'll be quite honest, I didn't bury them. I said that they were alive. I said they had a chance. And I'm not willing to say I was right yet because there's still 8 games as we record this, 8 games behind the Twins in the AL Central. But they've won 8 of 10. The bats are starting to come around. They feasted on bad opponents, including the Tigers. 6 wins over the Tigers in the past week plus. Daryl, your thoughts on these Indians now that they are showing signs of life and are currently 42-35, 7 games above 500 for the first time this season?
Well, the Cleveland Indians are welcome because ever since I've read them their last rights, I think that they've won like 7 of 9 series or something like that and have managed to get themselves not just above 500 and treading water, but they're a season high 7 games over 500. You look at the schedule going into the All-Star break, it's extremely favorable to them. They open up a series with the Royals. You've got Baltimore. And then I believe they play the Royals again before the All-Star break, before finishing up with the Reds. So you've got the crapola of the American League sitting in front of you here before the All-Star break. So this is a prime opportunity for them to really get fat. I think Terry Francona has done an amazing job. You're seeing the value of a quality baseball manager. They don't have a legitimate cleanup hitter. 3/5 of the starting rotations on the injured list are unavailable. The bullpen has had its ups and downs, and here we can say now that they've gotten this Twins lead in the division down to single digits, you can, I think, legitimately begin the conversation about whether or not they're going to be able to catch the Twins. And, well, if they keep playing 800 baseball, I'm going to go out on a limb and say they got a pretty good chance of doing just that.
Yeah, I think if you're a fan of the Indians, and obviously if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are, I don't know how you're not positive and thinking in a positive light with this team. Corey Kluber is still out. Mike Clevinger came back for a start, then hurts his ankle in that start. Wasn't great in that start. Misses a game and could start later this week, or this weekend rather. But we're not sure if he's going to. So the fact that you've only gotten three starts from Clevinger, Carrasco's out, Kluber obviously has been out for the majority of the season, and yet Trevor Bauer struggled, and yet these young kids have found a way, and I don't care who the hell they're pitching against. It's major league teams. They're teams that are trying to win. You know, those players out there that they're going up against that are in the plate or in the batter's box, they're trying to hit the ball, and these young guys like Zach Plesac, these young guys have stepped up and played well. And it's just, I think it's a testament to the organization because they've found a way to keep themselves in it, hover around 500. And now that the schedule's gotten weaker, they're feasting on these bad opponents, which is exactly what good teams do. And if they can make some headway here, Daryl, I mean, they don't face another winning team before the All-Star break. I think they're seven games above 500 right now. If they can get to 10 to 12 games above 500, we're talking about a team. I don't care about the Twins. We're talking about a team that will be surging. I know the schedule gets harder after the break. I understand all of that. But everything they went through in this first half, if they can be 10 to 12 games above 500, I think that is a win. And it's realistic at this point to think that. It's realistic at this point to expect it. And, yeah, if that's the case, the Twins haven't been there before. And what I mean by that is this group of Twins hasn't had to fend off the defending champs. And that's what the Indians are in that division. They've dominated the division for 3 years, and if the Indians can put some pressure on them, and the Twins, everything's been roses and magical all season long, at some point something's going to fall off a bit. And if you're the Indians, if you can apply pressure, and I think they have, they're starting to at least, and can continue to do that, get within six or seven at the break, I think you feel really good about where you are, considering all of the circumstances, all of the injuries, everything that you've went through over the past 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, without question. I mean, it speaks to the organizational depth, especially from a pitching standpoint. The Indians have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to pitching right now. And you're right. They deserve a tremendous amount of credit, all levels, for what they have been able to accomplish here. And again, hopefully they're able to keep this momentum going. And, you know, to the people on social media that are crying, yeah, but it's the Tigers, and they're playing lousy teams. Let me see them do it against winning teams. Well, remember, this stretch started back when they had the Twins, the Red Sox, the Yankees, and they took two or three in all three of those series. And that's how you put this together. You know, you don't need a 10, 15, 22-game winning streak to really announce your presence, if you will, or get yourself in contention. You just have to chip away at this thing. Win two of three. And if you keep winning two of three, eventually that's going to start to pile up for you in a very positive way. And that's what we've seen, James, over these last 6 to 8 weeks with this ball club that had been hovering between two games under 500 and a game or two over 500. Now that they've been able to stack all these series victories on top of each other, you're starting to see it add up in the win-loss column, and they find themselves a season-high seven games on the plus 500 side. And I'm with you. Their goal should be to get into the All-Star break between 10 and 12 games over 500, and hopefully that's good enough to get you within. I'm going to shoot a little higher. They're eight games back now. If they could chip two more games, at least two more games off this Twins lead and go into the break just six back, then you set yourself up there for the second half of the season in the stretch run to really put that pressure that you were talking about on the Twins.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Rapine. This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. We're going to talk about the Cavaliers and their draft coming up in just a few minutes here on the pod. But Daryl, something happened yesterday. Bobby Bradley, he gets promoted. Tribe fans extremely excited. And I like Bradley. I think, obviously, you look at the numbers, 24 home runs in the International League, 55 RBI. That's first in the league in home runs, second in RBI. 91 strikeouts, though, concerning. Not great at first base, although I think he is serviceable and is working every day to get better at that. I think the expectations for Bobby Bradley a little bit high on the outside of progressive field. I think people are thinking that this can be Edwin Encarnacion to a degree, or Edwin Encarnacion light. I don't expect that. I will say, though, Oscar Mercado, I was trying to temper expectations on him, and since he's come up, he has been outstanding. Moves up to that second spot. He's settled in there. Leads the team in batting average last time I looked. I didn't check it at the end of yesterday's game, but I'm pretty sure he's still ahead of Frankie there. This kid has exceeded expectations. We already talked about the young pitching. What do you think about Bobby Bradley? Because to me, I don't know how in the hell I think he could be good, but I don't know how in the hell he's going to exceed expectations after all these other young kids. It just seems really hard for me to bank on every single young guy panning out and being great as a rookie and contributing right away. I think he's going to hit home runs. I think he's going to have a lot of strikeouts and be limited defensively. What are your thoughts on Bradley? What are your expectations for him?
Well, I mean, what? He had 24 homers in AAA. He was leading the International League in homers. It's about time that he's up here. I'd been waiting about a month for this to happen. Certainly announced his presence with authority right out of the gate. Got the first big league hit and RBI out of the way with his first at bat. The strikeout thing, it's been something that's followed him throughout the minor leagues, and obviously something that the organization was working with him to try and cut down. I think it's somewhat symptomatic of the present game of baseball. There's not nearly enough action for my liking in the game, and I'm talking in a broad sense, not so much narrowed to the Indians, James, but just in a broad sense. I think one of the problems baseball has is there's not as much action, not enough balls being put in play. It feels to me that the game today has evolved into basically all or none. In other words, you're either hitting the ball out of the ballpark or you're striking out. Situational hitting is something that you don't see a lot of these days. I laugh when I see these shifts, and you know, people are focused on, well, they should abolish the shift and get that out of the game. No, how about you teach the hitter to pop it the opposite way? Because once you start hitting the opposite way, they stop shifting on you, or you bunt it the other way. You know, some of these shifts are so extreme, you could bunt it right down the line and walk into second base with a double. So I think that the game is changing. I think the strikeouts are just something you're going to deal with, especially with a young player. I remember early in his career, Jim Thome. He was an all-or-none type of hitter. He was either hitting the ball 500 feet or he wasn't hitting it at all. And as he went through his career, he learned to hit the ball the opposite way and learned to put the ball in play and things like that. So he's a young ball player, not overly concerned about it. There's going to be some growing pains with him. You understand that. But I'm really glad that the organization got him up. And I think the most important thing the Indians can do for him now is make sure he's in that starting lineup on a regular basis so he does get those at-bats.
Yeah, and he's going to get those at-bats. He won't play first a ton. The plan is to, put him at DH a lot, and then on days he is DHing, pregame, they're going to work him at first. So it's not like they're not grooming him, though. They want him to play first, and they want him to improve at that spot. They also want him to get those at-bats. And I'm with you, and I think if things do pan out, you mentioned earlier in this podcast, and it's been something that fans have obviously noticed, the revolving door in the cleanup spot. That's ideal. You know, if you could find a way, if he continues to hit, shows that he belongs. The same way Mercado started in the bottom of the order, showed he belongs, moves up. If Bradley, if you hit on him this year, it's huge. Here's what I think, though, because we always look at this year. And it's real easy to do that. But when I look at this team, I think about the future. And Zach Plesac, Aaron Savali obviously pitched well the other day. Jeffrey Rodriguez they traded for. Daniel Johnson, the outfielder that they got in the Nationals trade along with Rodriguez, playing well in Double-A, got promoted to Triple-A. We could see him up here next year. Jake Bowers recently, for the big league club, has done what? Shown flashes. I think, obviously, Oscar Mercado we talk about. The young pitchers, the young players, if Bradley hits here, the future, you can start to see it coming together. And it's really hard to win and retool. And the Indians, if it wasn't for the Twins being as great as they've been this year, and again, one of the best records in baseball, they were aggressive, it's went right, they haven't had many injuries, their starting pitching has been better than people thought it would be. Everything's went right for the Minnesota Twins. If it wasn't for that, we would be talking about a team that's competing for a division championship, and I still think they are, but obviously the lead is 8 games right now, but competing for a division championship. And the thing that they were banking on starting pitching with their aces, they've had the majority of that go down to injury or struggle and have still found a way. I think that that's huge, not only for this year, but for the future. And we don't like to look ahead or, you know, look it to the future. We worry about the now, and I get that. But when I start to think about this, the future Indians and this team in 2020, and we talk about trade scenarios, Trevor Bauer, et cetera, I think they're going to be able to make a deal, and I think there's a scenario where not only does it make them better, but all these young guys can carry the torch that the Michael Brantleys, that, you know, that all the guys that Edwin Encarnacion, obviously, heck, even long-term Carlos Santana, that they leave behind. I think we're starting to see flashes of it, and that is great to see. And not only if you're a Tribe fan, but if you're the Indians, because you needed to see that this year. You needed these young guys to show that they belong. And Oscar Mercado, building block. Jake Bowers, I know he's had his ups and downs, but I think he could potentially be one. Zach Plesac, certainly. So you've seen a lot of good things, and that's why we're talking about them still being in the division hunt, still certainly being alive and well in the wild card race. And it's good to see not only for the 2019 Indians, but for the 2020 and beyond.
Well, what we're learning about this organization is it's deeper talent-wise than we gave them credit for, because when you looked at it going into the season, depth was certainly something you looked at and you were extremely concerned about. They did not appear to be very deep. There were questions about, you know, not so much the starting rotation, but this lineup. And what we are finding out is they have a lot more talent down on the farm than we gave them credit for. Their pitching staff, it was, I think, a lot deeper than we initially gave them credit for. And you hit the nail on the head, James. It's hard to retool on the fly. And that's what the Indians seem to have been able to navigate, including all these obstacles that have been thrown at them with the injuries and not knowing if you're ever going to get Corey Kluber, you know, breaking his arm, Clevinger, the back injury. Now he comes back and he sprains his ankle. And these are things that you have zero control over. You can't predict. You can't plan for. And they've been able to weather the storm. They've been able to keep themselves in the playoff conversation. And again, if they stay hot and they continue to play the way that they have played, you know, when we get through the All-Star break, you know, we're going to be setting up for quite the pennant race down the stretch. And we're not used to pennant races. Typically, when the Indians are in the playoffs, they're running away with the thing. But, get ready for a true pennant race this year if they're able to keep this thing going. And again, I give Terry Francona and his coaching staff a tremendous amount of credit, because I got to tell you, you could see when I was filling in for you earlier this year, when you were off for a couple of days and I was down at the ballpark, like, I could see the anxiety on Terry Francona's face. I could kind of hear it a little bit in his voice of, you know, there's not much I can do. It is what it is. I'm dealing with whatever I have to deal with in the best way that I know how. And to his credit, and one of the great things about Terry, and it's such a cliche, but it's so true. He never gets too high when things are going great, and he never gets too low when things are not going well. He's the same guy each and every day, and that's really, really hard to do, especially when things are not going well. And the Indians have gone through stretches this year where things were not going well, and he's been able to maintain that consistency. And I think that the players also, that's how you get the most out of people. He's as genuine as they come. And when you're a genuine leader and you're not phony, that's how you're able to get the most out of the people that work for you. And Terry Francona is a master at that.
Daryl, I'm going to put you on the seat right now because you're right. When you filled in for me, you buried them. I'd say right now, if I had to pick one side or the other, the fact that they're alive and well in the wild card race, the fact that I do think at some point the Twins, the baseball gods are going to give the Twins an injury or they're going to give the Twins a bad stretch, something like that. I think the Indians make the playoffs. I'm saying that right now when they're seven games above 500, starting to surge, 8 of 10. But I still think it's a semi-take here, depending based on where they're at in the standings. What say you? Do they make the playoffs? Do they not? If you had to pick right now, which way you leaning?
Well, obviously I'm leaning toward them at least getting the wild card.
He's coming around.
I just – I hate the wild card, though. I absolutely hate the one-game playoff. My preference for them would be to roar back and win the division outright and get yourself into the ALDS. So I think that they can get into that wild card game at the worst, playing the way they're playing right now. I think they're a half game behind Texas for that second wild card spot, and they'd be looking, if my memory serves me correctly, at a rematch with the Tampa, soon to be maybe partially Montreal Expo Rays or whatever. So I'm going to say that they keep this up and they at worst make the wild card game. I don't know if they come back and catch the Twins to win the Central for a fourth straight year. But again, the trajectory that they're on, and I don't want to be prisoner of the moment like I was a month ago when I read them their last rights. But the trajectory that they're on, looking at the schedule, I don't see a skid coming anytime soon before the All-Star break. The Twins are scuffling a little bit. They're, I think, 3-5 over their last eight games. Maybe they come back to earth a little bit before the break and et cetera. I think they play the Twins like 10 or 12 times. The Indians certainly have positioned themselves to control their own destiny, and that's really at this point all you can ask.
No doubt about it. And I will say this, I'll add this, even though I feel more confident, if you had to say wild card or division, obviously it's easier to say wild card right now. I'm assuming they make the playoffs because I think they become buyers at the deadline. I don't think they stand pat. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to go out and get this big bat or anything like that. But Derek Dietrich, you know, I think Jason Kipnis at some point is going to struggle again. Could I see them going out and getting Derek Dietrich? I could. Could I see them going out and getting someone like that that is just a nice addition, a nice piece for a double-A prospect that no one's really heard of? Yeah, I could. So I certainly think the Indians could be buyers. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Rapine. Obviously, we're high on the Tribe. What do we think about the Cavaliers and what they did in the draft? That plus some wedding talk. What's the most important thing for you at a wedding? I know what it is at my wedding. I know what the guests want. We'll talk about that and the Cavs draft next, right here on the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Welcome back into the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. I'm James Erpine. He is Daryl Ryder. We are your beat writers for 92.3 The Fan, 92.3thefan.com. Great to be with you as always. Daryl, we talked about the Cavs draft last week. Since then, they picked Darius Garland fifth overall. Let's start with him. You said the draft didn't matter because they were picking fifth overall. I said they could get an impact player. I thought Garland was one of those guys. They got him. National pundits low on the Cavs draft. I haven't seen anyone give them an A. I think the highest I've seen is a B. Your thoughts on what the Cavs did, specifically Garland, fifth overall?
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of sample size there to work with. So there's a lot of projection here. I look at even in the 4 games and a quarter that he played, I look at the quality of competition also. Not that great, but he's a shooter. He's a scorer. This is going to be interesting to see now with him and Colin Sexton and this two-guard front, as head coach John Beilein likes to refer to it as. I'm a little old school, old-fashioned. I believe a point guard is a facilitator, not a shooting guard. And the Cavaliers now have two shooting guards that they're going to put on the floor. They don't have a point guard. It was funny, Larry Nance Jr. was on Twitter draft night, joking about Garland lobbing balls to him and that. And the first thing I thought was, who wants to tell Larry that he doesn't pass? Because same with Garland, they don't pass. Although it was funny on the scouting report that the Cavaliers distributed, of the 4 points that they listed for him, the first was dynamic shooter with deep range. The second, has a great feel for creating space for his shot. The third thing was changes speeds effectively. And the fourth thing that they listed was has good vision and is a willing passer. They made a note to put on the scouting report that he's a willing passer. Because he's a shooting guard. They're going to go with two shooting guards. Nobody can play a lick of defense on this basketball team. So it's going to be interesting to see what John Beilein is able to do. But I'll say this about the Cavaliers. There was no way for them really to impact the roster this offseason. And I wrote about this after the draft. You know, they were stuck in a logjam with the salary cap. They got to cut a $7 million luxury tax check if the season started today. And so the only way for them to improve and impact the roster was through the draft. And they ended up with 3 young kids. They have a coaching staff that is focused on teaching and developing talent. So what they did was is they added 3 kids, starting with Darius Garland, to teach and develop. And again, I'm very curious to see how this plays out. I'm not going to sit here and rip the organization for the pick. I'm not going to throw a hot take out there because I don't have a sample size to really come up with something that is somewhat intellectually based. I try and do that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to sit back and see how this goes. I think that Coby Altman, all things considered, did a fairly nice job on draft night, though.
Yeah, I disagree with you on a few points. One, I don't think Darius Garland is a shooting guard. I think Darius Garland can certainly be a point guard in today's NBA. I know you look at his assist numbers, and it's 2.6, but by all accounts, he has a great feel for the game. The reason I love this pick, and we'll get to the other two picks in a second, the reason I love this pick, is because the Cavaliers didn't say, oh, we used the eighth pick on this guy last year in Colin Sexton, and we like him, but we don't love him, so we're going to pick someone else that isn't as good as the guy we would pick if we didn't pick Colin Sexton. Like, that's dumb. You know who does that? The Browns up until a couple of years ago when John Dorsey joined them. Like, that's how bad organizations are run. And I hate that the national media is like, how are they going to work? You know what? It's the eighth pick. You know who else was the eighth pick? Marquise Chris. Like, if Colin Sexton doesn't work out, and I'm high on Colin Sexton, and I think he's going to be a good player in the NBA, I don't think he's a franchise savior. So until you have the franchise savior, guess what you need? You need to find the franchise savior. And I think that the difference is between the two guys is Darius Garland is an elite shooter. He's not a good shooter. He's not a guy that works his tail off to be a good shooter, and I think that's what Colin Sexton is. He's a guy that can dribble the ball down the court and pull up from 35 like Damian Lillard can, like Steph Curry can, like Trae Young can. There aren't many guys that can do that consistently. Now, does he need to be better passing? Sure, I will say, small sample size like you said, and the way the Beeline offense, the way he wants to construct it, shooters all around, guards attacking. I think this idea that Sexton will never be able to average 5 assists or 4 or 5 assists a game, I think that's a little overblown. Same thing with Garland. If you have 3-point shooters hanging out there and you're drawing defenders in by driving into the lane, you make a couple layups as a 6'2 guard, people are going to start to come in and try to hit you. That's when you kick it out to the corner. That's when you kick it out for three. I like it. I do. I think that Garland was the highest ceiling. And if you're the Cavaliers, we always talk about how they can't get free agents. Fine. Give me ceiling. Because in the NBA, if you find a star, it changes everything. LeBron comes back the second time. Why? Say what you want about, oh, yeah, he wanted to come home. He wouldn't come here. He wouldn't have came back here if Kyrie Irving wasn't here. If there wasn't a shot to win, he wasn't going to come here and lift up a 10-win Cavs team that didn't have any stars. So when you get a star, it makes it so much different, and I think the Cavaliers took a big swing to hope that Darius Garland is a future star. Colin Sexton's a really good player. I don't think he's a future star. Maybe he ends up being a sixth man down the line, but I am interested to see how the two-guard setup works. I will say this, Daryl. I do think the Cavaliers, last year at times, they were very talent-deprived. I think they not only did they add talent in this draft, but they're young. And young can sometimes be fun to watch. It might make you pull your hair out at times. But the idea of Darius Garland, who I think will throw lobs to Larry Nance Jr., will throw lobs to some of these guys. Kevin Love with these two guards. And then you mix what else they did in the draft. I see the vision. But ultimately, I'll praise Kobe Altman. It might not work. But the fact that you took the big swing on the potential star versus the lower ceiling players, you know, Jarrett Culver, everyone wanted him. They would have taken the kid out of Virginia, who DeAndre Hunter, who went fourth. That's what I've been told multiple times. That's who they were going to take. If he was there, obviously they didn't get him. I love this pick. I think it's an upside pick. And again, you don't let the Sexton pick get in the way of drafting a future all-star. I think when they watched Garland work out in Los Angeles, they fell in love with him because of his shooting. I think the passing will come. Those concerns will be there. But the thing I'm most worried about with Garland, it's not passing. It's not skill at all. It's injuries. Obviously, he injured his knee last year. He's 6'2". He looks like, and you saw him, but he looks like he's about as wide as me, which isn't that wide for an NBA player. So that part is concerning. But as far as everything else, I think the skill's there. I think it'll take time to develop. But I think the Cavaliers got a potential future all-star, which is what you want with the fifth overall pick.
Yeah, well, I think Sexton can be an all-star too. And so I'm not willing to limit Colin. I think Colin has a tremendous amount of upside, especially with the way he finished the second half of that season as a rookie. You can see the method to the madness with the roster construction, and I think that that's what has me feeling good. You know, as far as the workout in Los Angeles, from what I understand, Garland wasn't just, you know, shooting on air. Like, there was pressure and that applied to him while he was shooting, and I guess he didn't miss a shot for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not hating on the pick, not by any stretch of the imagination. I do see a lot of similarities between Colin Sexton and him, but I'm not chalking that up as a negative thing either, James. I'm just curious as to see where the assists are going to come from. I was joking draft night that the Cavalier offense is going to be put Kevin Love down on the block, throw it into him, and the first guy to get open between Sexton and Garland, he's the one that gets the basketball to shoot. Same thing, with Larry Nance Jr. And you mentioned roster construction and the drive and kick offense. Get into the lane, create something. If you get shut off going to the rim, you can kick it out to an open shooter. And that's what, Dylan Windler's supposed to be for them. He is going to be their wing sharp shooter. So I can at least close my eyes and see what John Beilein and Kobe Altman are trying to put together as far as a vision. Because so many times with drafts, and you brought up the Browns, and I thought it was a pretty fair point. So many times you come out of drafts and you're like, what the hell are they doing? Like, what are they trying to accomplish here? And I don't feel that way with the Cavaliers. And I realize that it's going to be a long way back. People are going to have to be very patient with this team. It's going to be a long way back to the playoffs for them. But at least I can see and I can understand what John Beilein and Kobe Altman are trying to construct from a roster situation. And again, considering their salary cap limitations, their lack of flexibility, inability to do a whole hell of a lot in free agency, the draft was the only way Kobe Altman was going to be able to significantly impact this roster, and he was able to get three kids in here. And again, you can kind of see and understand where they're coming from, what they're trying to accomplish, and specifically where each of these players fit into what they're trying to accomplish and do.
Yeah, and I think that ultimately the Dylan Windler pick, probably the safest pick. I think he's going to be one of those guys that can get you 12 to 15 points on some nights just because he's going to hit three or four threes, and he's going to get you some rebounds, and he's going to try defensively. As for Kevin Porter, I love it. I love it because, again, all you need is one of these guys to become stars, and I don't think Dylan Windler has the profile of becoming a star. I think he's going to be a pretty good basketball player in the NBA, but Kevin Porter Jr. has that type of ceiling. You talk to any type of talent evaluator out there, they think he's a top 10 talent potentially in this draft. Obviously, Darius Garland certainly considered that. Both have concerns. There's a reason one only went 5th versus 30th. Here's what I'll say, though. They took the big swings because they got the culture. That's the thing we talked about. The LeBron coming here, he was the culture. The organization revolved around him. When you bring Beilein in, you're saying, all right, we're going to get you a young roster that's talented. It could have question marks. And we're going to let you work with it and mold it into what it needs to be successful. And I think John Beilein getting his hands on Kevin Porter Jr., John Beilein getting his hands on Darius Garland, even Windler, I love it. That's why I was on board with the Cam Reddish pick, because I thought Cam Reddish had a high ceiling. And the reason you bring in a guy like Beilein is because you want him to get the most out of those young players and get them to their full potential. So I love it. I get people are so worried about fit right now. The Cavaliers don't need to give a damn about fit to a certain degree. They need to figure out who can be great and who can't and try to find a great player. And the rest, fit. Fit's what happens when you try to win games. The Cavaliers need to finish in the top 10 next year, or that pick goes to New Orleans. It was an Atlanta pick. It would have went to Atlanta in the Kyle Korver trade, from that Kyle Korver trade, but it's top 10 protected. It got sent to New Orleans when Atlanta traded up to 4th overall. Cavaliers need to be bad again this year, and they need to be in the top 10. So this idea that, let's worry about fit. No. Don't worry about that. Worry about finding a great player. And when you can do that, and when you take swings like that, I won't criticize it, because that's what you do. The Browns were bad, and then they found a franchise quarterback, and it changes things. The NBA is the other sport like that. You're bad, then you find a superstar. All of a sudden, everyone looks at your organization differently. Yep. And that's why the Cavs have to do what they did and take swings and misses. I had people telling me, or swings and see if they hit, and if not, and they miss, I'm not going to criticize them. I had people saying that 4 second-round picks was too much to buy the 30th pick, and I know they gave up $5 million as well for Kevin Porter Jr. They had 1,000 second-round picks, and they're going to get more for all these players that are in the final year of their contracts that they trade away, the Tristan Thompsons of the world before the deadline, the Jordan Clarksons, might get more than a second-round pick. But to me, That's what I want. I don't give a damn about the second round picks. I want big swings because if it hits, it hits well and it changes everything for your franchise. I loved what they did. It might not work out. I'm fine with it not working out. I'm not fine with organizations that don't take the swings. At least the Cavaliers are doing that.
Well, and you know what? It's an inexact science to try and build an NBA roster or rebuild an NBA roster. You know, the Boston Celtics come to mind. I mean, they did everything right as far as trying to build the franchise, starting with those blockbuster trades with the Brooklyn Nets that involved, you know, Paul Pierce, and they got that just the horde of draft picks from Brooklyn, and they did everything right. They drafted well. They have no NBA championship to show for that rebuild. They have an Eastern Conference Finals loss to the Cavaliers to show for it, and that's really about it. And so John Beilein was brought here to develop talent, okay? That's one of his strengths as a coach. And so what did Kobe Altman do? He got some kids that Beilein now can work with and develop. You've got four players, Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Dylan Windler, and Kevin Porter, that you hope, regardless of roles, whether they become bench players or they stay in the starting lineup when you are a contender, assuming you return to contention. But the goal is that those four players serve a purpose and have roles when this team does return to contention. This is part of the process. So, again, I agree with you. The fun part is you know, while yes, when you have young players, you want to pull your hair out, but part of having the young players and the fun that comes with it is you don't know what to expect, and they might do some things that are going to surprise us. So it's going to be a long way back for the Cavaliers, but they got some foundation pieces in place. They got some players that really fit with what John Beilein wants to do. That's the other part of this too, is, you know, Darius Garland, you know, fits John Beilein. Dylan Windler fits John Beilein. I think Kevin Porter, doesn't matter who the coach is, he would fit. You have pieces that fit what the head coach wants to do, and that's to your point about organizational culture and your general manager and your head coach being on the same page.
All right, Daryl, before we get out of here, I'm getting married in 5 days, and I'm excited for it. The bad part about the wedding process is there's all these things that you need to do, especially it's an out-of-town wedding, so it's not like we could plan everything. We're not at the site right now. We don't know what's going on. But yeah, getting married in a couple days. I'm excited. I think that the most important thing is the alcohol. So that was one of my jobs. I told my fiance, I'll handle that. I'll make sure we have enough because we're getting married at her uncle's lake house. So it'll be in a yard. So we're supplying all the alcohol. So I had to like figure out how much we needed, beer, wine, liquor, because you need a full open bar. To me, yes, that's the most important thing at a wedding, right? Like what are the most important things at a wedding? To me, I always wonder, and I almost feel rude saying it. I'm like, is it a full open bar? Is it not? Like beer and wine I can get by with. But I've been to weddings where there's like a limit, like $1,500, and then it starts to become a cash bar. And I hate that. And I don't want that to happen at my wedding. And it won't because it's, again, in a yard. We brought in bartender, stuff like that. So what we're doing is just supplying all the alcohol on our own. You save money that way, but you also, you can get what you want, et cetera. Your thoughts on the idea or the most important things when you attend a wedding, what comes to mind?
Yeah, you check the number one box, the two most important words, open bar. So good job out of you. That's what you got to do there. Second most important thing, hopefully you're serving something that's not pasta or chicken. Because, well, let's be honest about it. Weddings are extremely expensive. I wouldn't know. I'm not married. But they are extremely expensive for couples to put on. And chicken and pasta, I think, are the most, like, I guess, economical dinners to serve for weddings. So, it seems every wedding that I've gone to in my life, it's been chicken or pasta for dinner. So,
and it's never good. It's never like high end. Like very rarely have I had like a wedding dinner that's good. Can I tell you what we're doing?
Yeah.
So we're Like, it's a classy event. Obviously, it's a wedding, but we're not, like, high.
Trust me, not all weddings are classy.
But we're not, like, high-end people where we need, like, the highest, the best of the best. We're doing a food truck. We're doing a taco food truck. We're going to do a salsa bar with chips and salsa.
This is my kind of wedding.
See, that's what I figured. I was like, what can we get that people are going to like? Everyone likes some kind of taco.
Right.
You know, whether you like a fish taco, you like a chicken taco, steak taco, whatever it is, you like tacos. So, yeah, we're doing a taco truck. I'm pretty excited about that.
Oh, that's fantastic. That open bar and a taco truck.
Yeah, there will be margaritas, too.
You are in the running for wedding of the year.
Look at that.
You really are.
Look at that.
No sarcasm at all. That is a great way to go.
The only thing, I'm going to ruin it for everyone. It's in Michigan. So all the Ohio State fans now are going to be like, oh, my God, Michigan this time of year, beautiful. That's my only other concern right now is that I hope to God it doesn't rain. It's been raining so much in the Midwest.
As long as you get your booze and your gas and your tacos in Toledo, you're good.
That's right. Oh, man. No, I'm excited, though. So, yeah, so we're pretty good, right? Like, people are going to be happy because you worry about the order of things or this or that. Dude, if you give people alcohol and food, they'll be good. I think we're all
right. What are you doing for a dance floor? Are you guys doing that like in the cabin, or are you getting a floor put down?
Getting a floor put down in the backyard, and the lake will be right behind it. So it'll all be right there. We'll have dinner in the front yard. So, yeah, it should be good. I'm hoping for no rain and a good sunset. Some of these sunsets on this lake. It's Lake Allegan. Some of these sunsets are freaking amazing, picturesque type sunsets. So I'm hoping for at least a decent one, because that would make for some quality pictures.
All right. Do not use the four-letter R word ever again leading up to the wedding. Don't even talk about it. Don't think about it. Don't speak it.
I looked today, and it said it was time out.
I'm saving you here. I'm trying to save the wedding here. Don't talk about it.
Yeah, I know. That's my biggest concern, man.
Just like the length of games in a baseball press box, we do not talk about how fast the game is moving along.
That's fair.
Okay? We do not talk about the forecast. Don't think it, fine, but don't speak it, and you'll be okay.
Any advice? I know you're not married. Any advice for me before we go?
Any advice for you? My biggest piece of advice would be that the two most important words that have to come out of your mouth, yes, dear, happy wife, happy life. If the wife isn't happy, you're going to be miserable. So congratulations to you. I hope that it sounds like the ceremony and the reception are going to be just absolutely beautiful. I can't wait to see the pictures. But happy wife, happy life. Congratulations to you.
Look at you. Thank you so much. We'll see. We'll see if maybe she says no and like jumps in the lake and swims away. Or I don't. I guess it's no. She already said yes. But instead of I do, she says I don't and jumps in the lake or jumps on, a jet ski or something and gets the hell out of town. So we got to get that part done first.
If she shows up on Saturday, that's the wedding, right?
Saturday.
The wedding.
Yep.
If you see her Saturday and she's wearing a wedding dress, I think you're in pretty good shape.
That's the thing, too. There'll be nerves because we're not doing a first reveal. It's only the music starts, she's walking down the aisle. So I won't see her until then. So if I don't see her, oh, crap. It'll be very lonely up there.
I think that there's a superstition or something with weddings that the groom is not supposed to see the bride for like 24 hours before the wedding. If I'm remembering these things correctly, again, I'm not married.
It's the night of. So we'll see each other at the rehearsal the night before.
Okay.
But like we're not going to sleep in the same place that Friday night. We'll be in separate places. She'll be with her bridesmaids. So.
Okay, gotcha. So, good luck to you. It sounds like I got to tell you, you've had this thing under control for as long as I've known you. You have been very even keeled about this. You've had the wedding planning done meticulously. It sounds like that you've covered all your bases. Just like I said, understand that as long as she's happy and smiling, you'll be happy and smiling too. So, and don't go to bed angry. Here we go. I gotta wish my I got to wish my parents a happy 50th wedding anniversary. Ooh. They just had their 50th wedding anniversary. I guess the key is don't go to bed angry. After all these years, they're still together. After raising me, they're still together. So that in and of itself is an achievement. But, yeah, so it can be done. But there's a lot of compromise, a lot of give and take in relationships. It's not about who wins the argument. You shouldn't keep score and stuff like that. So, don't sweat the small stuff. That's the other piece of advice I think I'll give you from the single guy who's not married. Don't sweat the small stuff in the relationship. Don't allow little tiny disagreements to become big blow-up arguments, and you'll be fine.
See, look at that. Ladies, what are you talking? You hear that from Daryl's already. He knows it all. So you need to, at right or wrong fan, slide in his DMs. And take him for tacos and margaritas. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Erpine. Daryl, thanks for the kind words. We are off next week, both of us.
Yes, we are.
And then after that, I can't even remember. We're going to be going podcast for podcast for podcast. We'll have plenty of Browns. They're on the horizon. Plenty of Indians and Cavs as well. Make sure you check out our work on our website, 923thefan.com. Daryl, I will talk to you soon. We will be back at it July 10th. Until then, enjoy vacation.
And for you, the next time we speak, you'll be a married man.
Uh-oh.
So good luck to you. Congratulations once again. Enjoy the day. It'll be something you'll remember for the rest of your life. And I wish you and the missus to be all the happiness in the world. And like I said, don't sweat the small stuff.
We're out of here. Have a good one, guys. Thank you so much for tuning into the Cleveland Sports Beat podcast. Until next time, he's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Erpine.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.